This is Marketing Voices, featuring the fresh perspectives of industry leaders and examining the impact of social media on marketing.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Jones. Welcome to Marketing Voices. And today I'm going to be speaking with a guest by the name of Rex Briggs, who's founder and CEO of Marketing Evolution, which is a very successful market research and consulting firm. And we're going to be talking about hyper-targeting. And it's a topic that I have not delved into at all on Marketing Voices in the last year and a half. And so I'm really excited to have him educate all the listeners about this topic. And he had spoken recently at AdTech about this topic, or maybe not that recently, but in April here in San Francisco. So it's a topic that's really very interesting to a lot of marketers. But first, before we start, I do want to say thank you again to WebEx, who's a sponsor of Marketing Voices. And they are, at this point, doing around 5 million online collaborations per month, which is pretty impressive. So I do want to say, as I said, thank you to WebEx. And now back to the podcast. So hello, Rex Briggs. Thank you very much for joining me.
Hello, Jennifer. Good to be here.
Good. Well, first question here. Please define hyper-targeting.
Hyper-targeting. Well, it does mean different things to different people, but the way we were using it at the conference was to refer to this next generation of targeting that is leveraging a lot more information than the first generation of targeting, which was more based upon what pages people looked at or what people said on an online survey, and is trying to gather from the social network community, the way people are connected to each other, and the things that they're talking about in their natural language, and using that to try to focus on advertising and marketing messages that are going to be more relevant to people. So that's really what's meant by hyper-targeting as a loose definition.
So it's really trying to find the true fan of your brand, essentially.
Well, yeah, or you may be trying to find a true fan of a competitor brand and trying to give some reasons why that they might want to think about you. So, yeah, it's really this idea of that has been goes back to really the beginning in the promise of the early internet, which is this one-to-one future that many of us bought into, the ability to talk to people more directly and individually based upon who they are rather than just the spray and pray approach of mass media marketing.
So now you've been doing hyper-targeting, involved in it since at least a decade. You and I were talking before we went live about your experience at Wired. So talk about, if you could, that experience a bit, and then also talk about the promise or reality of all this hyper-targeting.
It is hard to believe that it's been, I guess, over a decade now. But and I do think we are making progress. But you know, when I first became involved, I was working at a company called Yankelovich Partners, which did a lot of custom segmentation for large marketers. And the challenge was always that if you did what was called psychographic segmentation, and you tried to find out what the hopes and the dreams and the fears of people were so that you could understand what products and services best aligned to those individual people and how to talk with them. The challenge was that even though once you figured that out, you had no way of buying media to align and reach those individual segments of consumers. And then came the internet. And you could see that with the internet, that was going to change. And so I went over from Yankelovich and joined Wired because Louis Rossetto, the founder there, really captured my imagination with his description of what this one-to-one future that he wanted to build out, and he wanted me to build the technology and the targeting and discipline to make it happen. And what I quickly learned was that the technology is one challenge, and we have some great people helping us and some great partners, but there was a whole other challenge, which is how to get people who were used to doing things a certain way, in the traditional way, to think differently about targeting and to begin to call and to talk to people individually is a totally different discipline than what most marketers are used to. In fact, it's different from what most media content creators are used to.
Well, it's true. I mean, marketers are really very used to going broad and not like one-on-one. So how do you make marketers accept this idea of one-on-one and to your point, sort of push them to move to a new way of thinking?
Yeah, you know, it's part of the name Marketing Evolution as a company was based upon this idea that marketing needed to evolve. And there's so many different ways that we need to evolve. One of the things that you can do is certainly you can begin your own skunk works on the technology and see how things work. And that's going to be important to get a core group, a small team that really understands how this technically works and what you can do with it and what its limitations are. Because it's not a panacea. It isn't perfect. But if you get that core knowledge base internal to you, that's going to be important. And I'll give you two other ones. The second thing you can do is you can begin to get some of the content people to think differently about what they're creating. When I mean content people, I may mean the people that create your advertisements or create the newsletter or create, you know, the e-letter, whatever it is. And to get them to begin to think about the different segments of consumers that exist. One of the things you might do is you might actually, after you've done some research with the technology to figure out what segments and types of people there are out there, hire a few actors to come in, give them the scripts and definitions of who these people are and how they act, and have them hang out for a lunch session with these people, and they can begin to relate and see these people as true, you know, full-dimensional people that they really, that these segments really represent. And I think what you're going to see is you'll see a mind shift because they begin to say, ah, I get why I'm going to be speaking totally differently to this type of a person than that type of a person.
Wait. So actors, to me that was like, wow, what an idea. And then, so how does that work? So you're saying that to have the actors then take on the persona of the people they're talking about, so then those people observing the actors can get it?
Oh, yeah. One of the things I've done, I got frustrated. I'm a data person. So I thought, you know, gosh, it's all right here in black and white. Print it out for you, you can see that this segment is really interested in cars, and this segment could care less about cars. This segment cares about their kids, and they're focused on protecting them. This one cares about their kids, but they actually want their kids to be challenged and to have a few mistakes. And so, line after line of data gave me these really rich profiles of who these people were, and I would hand them to the marketer that needed to execute it, and their eyes would glaze over. They couldn't see. All they saw was numbers. And so I thought, you know, gosh, here's a new idea. Why don't we brief the actors? And actors really aren't that expensive because a lot of them are trying to, you know, break through. You don't have to hire, you know, someone off of ABC Primetime. You can find these people in lots of different places. And you begin to tell them about who these people are and how they look at the world. And their craft is to get into the skin of different people based upon not a whole lot of data usually. And so they see this, and they can really think about, oh, well, I bet this person would dress like this, and I bet they would act like this, and they would probably talk like this. And they can bring to life those segments. And that interaction within an organization can begin to create that organization change in terms of a mindset that you need to make hyper-targeting successful.
Wow, is that cool. So have you done that, and it's worked?
Oh, yeah, we've done it a few times, and it's amazing. Just the interaction, it's so fun. You know, and what's important is the third step, which is the follow-through, which is to then begin to say, well, how then are we going to change the way we are structured as an organization to work in terms of delivering different messages to these different segments? And that's a whole other, and then that becomes a practical challenge because first couple times we did the actor part, people loved it. They understood it. They understood who their segments were. And they went right back to doing work the way they always had.
Right. I was going to say it's very hard because it is. I mean, change is just, I mean, people get so scared. What I see a lot is that people are afraid to try these things because it just is so uncomfortable because it's so different.
Yeah, and that's really where I think that's why the first step I suggested was to start off with a small core group that really gets their hands on the technology and understands it and begins to get the richness of the data, and they get it mentally. And they have the tools so that organizationally, if you wanted to pursue it, you could. The actors as a next stage brings that to life and gives it dimension. And then the third stage is to begin to take small programs. Maybe it's your e-newsletter. Maybe it's a special section of a website or, you know, maybe it's whatever it is, direct mail, et cetera, and begin to say, on this one, we're going to now apply our targeting or hyper-targeting intelligence to do things differently. Maybe you do a deal with MySpace and say that's the place where we want to really leverage it. Or maybe you're using your own internal resources, like the letter that you send after somebody's bought something from you, where you have enough data and information to recognize what kind of segment they are. And what we found, to go back to the Wired example, when I first tried to make that transition happen, I gave all the data, said how we could execute it, and then people went back to doing their jobs the way they always had. 2 weeks later, I said, "Well, give me one of the editors. Let me work just with one editor. I don't need to change the whole organization, but I want to take our newsletter." We had something called Hot Flash. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah,
way
no,
back.
I do actually, because I'm a big Wired fan. So
okay,
yeah.
And so Hot Flash, we began to say, okay, we're going to take a small cross section of the hundreds of thousands of members. Maybe we'll take 50,000 of them, and we're going to put them into the segments and the targets. And actually, you might, since you were a fan of Wired, you might find this interesting. We had different segments, some interested in entertainment, some interested in news, and so forth. But within news, we actually found that some of the people who were really interested in news were motivated because they wanted to be the first.
Right. I was just going to say, that's how I was.
Okay, so you were in that segment.
Yeah,
perfect.
Yeah,
I know which,
yeah.
I know which Hot Flash letter you would have gotten then.
Yeah.
The other one was people who had just had the same behavior in terms of how often they read the news, but they were motivated to read the news because they were afraid of being last to know. And the way that you pitch a story to get them to be interested and read and to come back to the site and read more is different to those two different people. Mm-hmm. You know, one, you're saying, hey, this is great, brand new breaking news, exciting, you know, the cutting, you know, be on the cutting edge. The other one is the world is passing you by. You need to catch up. And having that editor at large understand those different segments and to write the intro of different stories for that week with that sensibility in mind increased the response rate from the people in our community that we were trying to get to come back and stay engaged with Hotwired.
So, like, by how much? By, like, 2% or by, you know, because that's usually the, you know, you're talking about a 1% response rate or 3%, I guess it is. But so did it increase it, like, to 5% or something like that?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Wired later on did a cover story called The One-to-One Future that Chip Baer wrote. Mm-hmm. And he retold some of that data because he was familiar with how that worked. And he interviewed me and we shared some of the stats. And I think the part that we were allowed to publicly release, because we had to check it through the organization, was that it increased it enough to say this really worked. But but the cost of it, if we had to have hired outside resources, wouldn't have been scalable. But because I was internal and I had a team that was internal, it paid out. So I think the economics of it, which it's probably been years enough by that I won't be sued for telling you this, but the economics were something like it was increasing the value of a user by about 18%.
Wow.
But that only amounted to about, I think, 12 cents worth of value creation.
But if you're talking, you know, of course, Wired subscription, at that time, I don't know, I guess what it was, about 60,000? Was it that big at that
time? Well, the Hot Flash one was a bigger base, and you just nailed it. The issue then becomes scale.
Right.
So if you're going to invest in making the change, the question then becomes how can you scale this to make it really work?
Right.
And what's the economic of the value? Because for Hotwired and Hot Flash, which was trying to get people to come onto Hotwired, the economic value is every page that you looked at had an ad on it, and that ad was worth a penny or whatever it was. And so you could then see how many incremental pages did we get, and that was the economic equation. And frankly, as for some businesses, like in automotive, there's enough of a margin of value there that, my God, you'd be insane not to be thinking about hyper-targeting. And then there's other categories where you have this razor-thin margin, and it might not be worth it. The economics just actually might not work. The mass media model, as silly as it seems when you have targeting capabilities, may still be more economical.
Well, I feel like we could talk about this for hours, but Rex, I want to say thank you very much for all of this, and it really is a topic that I would love to delve into more because there's a lot of different avenues to it, and I think it really hits the point of like where social media is going to go to when marketers get really sophisticated about this, you know, 2 and 3 years hence from now, and it will be a topic that you'll say, gosh, you know, I remember when people didn't do that.
Absolutely. Well, Jennifer, thank you for having me on your show.
Thank you very much. So, again, I've been talking to Rex Briggs, who's CEO and founder of Marketing Evolution. He's at least been involved in hyper-targeting for a decade or so and was with Wired doing that. So, great guest, good company. And for all the listeners out there, please join me next week. And until then, may all the voices you hear be marketing voices.